This is a special post-election live call-in episode of The United States of Anxiety, WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. I'm Jamie Floyd, and tonight our conversation is about women, specifically the women who voted for Donald Trump. And if you are one of them, we want to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. You can also tweet us your comment at WNYC. If you're a woman, especially a white woman who voted for Donald Trump, we want your perspective on this election. Or maybe you know a woman, a white woman, who supported Trump. We want to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692, or tweet your comment at WNYC. We're going to broaden the conversation beyond white women as we move through the hour. But right now, we're starting with white women who voted for Trump. Because tonight, exactly 1 week after Donald Trump pulled off this upset, people continue to express surprise, even shock at the result. And one reason for that surprise is the voting bloc. Everyone expected Hillary Clinton to win. Women.
Human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights once and for all.
Women generally trend Democratic. Hillary Clinton is a woman. And then there was her opponent.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
Donald Trump, the beauty pageant promoter who famously derided women, bragged about sexual assault, and got caught on tape. We're joined now by Michelle Cottle, who just yesterday published in The Atlantic a piece entitled Why Women Continue to Back the GOP. She joins me now. Thank you so much for being here.
That's my pleasure.
Well, you and I, Michelle, know, we all know, that you can't win the White House in the United States without women voters. So what happened with these critical voters? And let's start first, Michelle, by talking specifically about white women voters.
Well, this is what has everyone confused or just kind of disbelieving. They don't understand why Hillary managed to lose white women voters. But the political reality is that the Democratic presidential candidate always loses white women voters. You know, George Bush did better than John Kerry. McCain and Romney did better than Obama. You have to go back a long way to find a situation where this hasn't been the case. So it's not that Hillary did something unusually unpalatable. It's just that she didn't manage to win over this voting bloc that typically votes en masse for the other team.
What specifically were the percentage points here?
You know, she got 43% to Trump's 53%, which is better than Obama, who got 42% against Romney's 56%. So it's, you know, we're looking at a 10-point spread in any given year.
But still, a lot of women, Hillary Clinton trusted to be there for her, voted for Donald Trump. And you write, quote, failing to win their support is a broad problem for Democrats and not a specific failing of Hillary Clinton. What you've just said, in fact, can you try and explain some of the complicated factors, not just for Hillary Clinton, but for Democrats that that go into trying to win over this voting bloc, white women?
Well, unlike certain ways you can break down the electorate, culture is closely tied to party and ideology, and culture tends to trump gender. So if you are conservative, it doesn't matter if you are a man or a woman, you're going to tend to vote conservative. And so you have a lot of women who are going to vote their team. You know, they're the red team. So that's what they're going to do no matter what. And then you also have independents and some women who swing vote. You know, there's not we're not talking about as many of those, but those tend to be If they're voting for Republicans, they tend to be more married women, but there are a lot of, you know, when you break it down, a lot of the married women cohort falls into white women. So that's where you wind up with a, you sometimes wind up with people talking about married versus single women, but they're generally, they're lumping all, you know, minority groups and white women in together. But if you break this down simply by race, you wind up with these white women voting Republican, and it's because there are a lot of just conservative women out there.
All right, let's hear from some of these women or women who know these women. Let's speak with Stephanie on the Lower East Side. Stephanie, thank you so much for calling WMYC. You're on with Michelle Cottle.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to say that I'm Chinese, but someone in my family, my extended family, is a Jewish woman, and she has never voted ever in her life. She works for a hedge fund, and she came out this election to vote for Donald Trump. Despite acknowledging that he is a despicable person and is racist and you know, potentially anti-Semitic and sexist and all these things, I couldn't understand it myself. But she thought that Hillary Clinton could not run the country in a way that would be financially beneficial.
Did she say more than just that? Did she tell you why, Stephanie?
Essentially, that was her reason. She said that she didn't believe that Hillary could make, I guess, responsible financial decisions for the country, and that she felt that Donald Trump would be better for her economically. She described it as a purely economic decision.
And that may be what is motivating or what did motivate people to support Donald Trump, women to support Donald Trump, to vote for Donald Trump. Again, the number is 212-433-WNYC if you are one of those women who voted for Donald Trump. And let me go to Joyce in Nassau. I believe she, in fact, did vote for Donald Trump. Joyce, are you one of those voters who supported and then ultimately voted for Donald Trump? And if so, why?
Well, yes, I can't say I supported him, but I did vote for him. There is so much about him that disgusts me and that makes me very nervous, some of his rhetoric and some of his actions that he was accused of. But I ultimately did vote for him because of the concept of border security, national integrity, law and order. And I didn't think that Hillary would be that person that could restore order into our immigration system.
And you're in Nassau, am I correct? Long Island?
Yes.
How has this been for you to discuss with friends, family, neighbors? Are you looking forward to Thanksgiving?
Oh, I'm mum.
So you're sharing it with us on the radio, but you don't discuss it generally, huh?
Right.
All right. Thank you so much for calling us. I want to come back to Michelle Cottle, who published in The Atlantic why white women continue to back the GOP, because obviously, Michelle, it's not a monolith, as no group is. There are those who, as you point out in your piece, are core Republican voters, and gender is not going to trump that. But then, of course, there are people like Joyce who struggle with the decision until perhaps the very last moment and made their choice at the end.
And that happens a lot more in presidential elections than it does in Senate or congressional elections. I mean, people look at the president in a certain way, and voters tend to kind of want the president to speak to them on some level. You know, it's kind of like who moves them, you know, speaks to their heart as opposed to their head. And so you put that together with a lot of the change election, you know, we've heard about. A lot of people really, really were desperate for somebody who would do something different. And that's what Donald Trump was promising. Now, no one knows if he can deliver on it, but he had a very straightforward message of, I can save this country, I'm different, I'm a businessman, I'm going to drain that swamp. And even women who are independent or fence sitters or who were, you know, sometimes voted Democratic, thought, okay, sure, I'll give it a shot this time because I'm so desperate for someone to do something.
All right, let's take another call. Melissa, I believe you're calling from out of state. Is that correct, Melissa? Columbia, South Carolina?
Yeah, I live in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm from New York, but I go to school here now. And a lot of the things, like what I was noticing, was these women who voted for Donald Trump. Trump, they have a huge influence from their families if they're not married, and their husbands if they are married. Like, I did an internship at a non-for-profit organization that works with migrant Head Start children. So these immigrant families, their whole job is to help these families. Yet when you talk to them, we had lunch one day and we're all talking that they voted for Donald Trump. And I thought that was so funny because their whole life is spent working with immigrant families. And, I mean, basically it was because their husbands influenced them. And, or, you know, their parents told them that that's who they needed to vote for. And so I didn't really think of that, you know, coming from a research background. I wouldn't have even thought that would be a factor.
We're treading into dangerous territory here, Michelle, but how much are women influenced by their husbands, by their parents? Have we not moved beyond that, or is that still very much a factor for us as women?
Well, you know, it depends on where you are. And again, it goes back to the question of culture. One of the things that they looked at during the race is kind of the values of the different candidates' supporters. And unsurprisingly, Donald Trump supporters tended to place a fairly high value on traditional roles for men and women. And it goes beyond kind of like what the caller is talking about, where women are influenced by their husband. It was more along the lines of, even professionally, a lot of Trump voters were more comfortable if women did, you know, what are considered women's professions and men were in men's professions. Now, obviously, this varies wildly from state to state. Probably in New York, it's a lot different than it is in, say, rural South Carolina. But you do run into that, and that, again, speaks to the question of what culture you're in.
Hmm. Speaking of husbands and wives, I believe we have a husband here with us from Suffolk County. Daniel, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my wife, she voted for Donald Trump. I went for Hillary, and I had a lot of reasons, and we spoke about it a lot. And I didn't affect her vote as far as Donald Trump. I mean, I served almost 20, I suppose, served 20 years in the military, a Navy, Marine Corps, and Army. I'm a wounded veteran. The thing is, I was for Bernie Sanders, originally, and then I felt that Hillary Clinton was the next best option once the primary was over. And it had nothing to do with being affected by her husband. If anything, she was for Trump, not because she was for him, but she just came with an emotional reaction. Mm. It was about her gut. And it didn't really matter that the emails were a red herring. It didn't, 22 million emails from 2007 with George W. Bush. He deleted the same thing in words. Hmm. Didn't matter. Didn't matter whatsoever. And neither one of us are with the party. We're not Democrat or Republican. We make decisions based on, how we feel, all based on the issues normally. But when it came to this election, she was completely emotional about it. It had to do with she didn't feel that she trusted Hillary Clinton. And I mean, the Trump campaign, that they were very effective at souring the pool against Hillary Clinton.
And I don't want to, I guess I do want to step a bit into the personal here and ask you how difficult this has been for you and your wife to reconcile in your marriage.
Oh, we're fine. I mean, my wife is my high school sweetheart. I mean,
aww.
Shoot, she could have voted for Hitler, and I probably would have just, hit the swastika.
Well, now, you know? I got to press on that now. That's a very strong statement, and, there have been those who've made...
I'm African-American, so it's not really something that I really meant.
Yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah,
you
but,
know?
But, you know, there are those who are deeply, deeply troubled by Trump's rhetoric,
I'm bothered by it because I truly believe I see nothing but parallels between
right.
Pence and Trump and, Hitler and Himmler. I don't see a difference.
Smacks
of George Wallace.
So Daniel, were some of those conversations that you had in the House, were they feisty?
Oh, yeah. We would get into it. I mean, I remember I made her late for work one time because I wanted to argue for an extra 10 minutes.
But you didn't you didn't make her late to the polls.
No. We voted early in the morning.
Well,
we voted before 9 a.m. in the morning.
I'm glad you voted, and that's the important thing. And thank you for your military service. I want to say that as well. And thank you so much for your call and for your honesty.
I mean, people need to – I don't see a very good chance of Donald Trump picked someone worse than him to run with because Mike Pence, based on everything from Indiana, and these are facts, all the things about them, they're facts. I mean, he took money that was meant for HIV subsidies and used it for, you know, gay conversion therapy. It's not a made-up thing.
All right.
People tend to make,
Now, Daniel, I want you to get with your wife and have this conversation with her before the next election. But it's an interesting thing. Thank you, Daniel, so much for your call. It's an interesting thing that we get this call, Michelle, and we have another husband calling in about his wife because this is the kind of – he says, I'm fine with my wife. And – this is the kind of conversation across party lines that we can't seem to have in Washington and we can't seem to have as a nation, although Donald's able to have that within the four walls of his household, within the boundaries of his marriage. It's fascinating to me.
Well, you know, maybe if we made Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi live together for a while, it would happen.
Oh,
that might be good.
Never going to happen, my friend. All right, let me take another call. Frank is calling in from Plainview, Long Island. Frank, we were talking about husbands and wives, so I'm coming to you because I believe you are a husband as well.
Yes, I am, and thanks for taking my call. My wife voted for Hillary, but it was two special reasons. One was, at first, she was a Bernie Sanders. She wanted Bernie Sanders very badly because of Hillary's husband and the way she backed him when he had all that trouble with all those other women. She felt that was not a good role model for young women to follow when your husband's caught up in all that rhetoric that went on back then. And secondly, when the Democratic Party came out in the news that cheated Bernie Sanders, I forgot the lady's name, the head of the Democratic Party in Florida, she
Debbie
went ballistic.
Wasserman
Schultz. You could have put a donkey with a cap on and she would have voted for that person. She went crazy over that. That showed dishonesty, and the Democratic Party really, really, I think they lost her for
the rest
of her life.
So in the end, who did your wife vote for?
He voted for Donald Trump.
She voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and those two items.
For those two reasons. And the controversy surrounding Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, did not dissuade her.
It did not persuade her because she knew that the mainstream media puts the sound bits only what they like to pick and choose from your sentences. They're so far off base. You're out in left field somewhere, lost. And until you come back to, you know, printing the actual sentences and paragraphs that they use, she knew right away she wasn't going to believe any of that horse malarkey that you guys are putting out there.
But she would not extend that same reservation to the Hillary reporting.
The Hillary reporting was very vague, and for some reason, she was caught up. Everyone knows she was in a mess of trouble. She used her position to make her arrangements for her to get her donations. But you guys in the media did not want to push that too far for some reason. We don't know. But all the evidence is there. I mean, you got to be blind not to see it. And
Frank,
just ignored it, and she said she saw right through it.
Frank, I really appreciate your call. I want to ask you about another question coming back to you, Michelle. And that is not about gender as much as it is about race. Because as much as we are talking about the gender factor and women and why didn't they vote for Hillary Clinton, many people have said that this election was very much about race. And I want you to take a listen to my colleague, Rebecca Carroll, who is our producer here at WMYC for Special Projects. And here she is. I asked her about why she thought so many women voted for Donald Trump. And here's a part of what she said 2 days after the election.
What he really represents to me deeply is white supremacy and a sort of guardian of structural racism And, you know, a lot of white women like to think that they are in solidarity. But in fact, white supremacy has always served and favored white women.
And Michelle Cottle, I also received an email from a listener saying, quote, I am mystified by the women who supported Trump, particularly college-educated white women. It appears that the desire to preserve the racial hierarchy trumped, no pun intended, everything else, end quote. And I'm sure you're familiar with Carol Anderson, who's a professor of African-American studies at Emory University, who wrote the book White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. And she points out that the election is in part a backlash, especially to President Obama's election. Do you think that Hillary Clinton, Michelle Cottle, is suffering or suffered the fallout of race politics more than, or at least as much as, gender politics in this election?
I do think there's a lot of that. Now, one thing from the comments that you read, white college-educated women actually went for Hillary, which they did not do for Obama against Romney. But what sunk Hillary was non-college-educated white women. There was an act she did manage to pull college-educated white women away from Trump. So what we're talking about here is both women and men, predominantly of the white, non-college-educated, and often working class. And people have talked a lot since the election that this is kind of the revenge of the white working class, who I do think, under the Obama years, listened to all the kind of racial rhetoric and dog whistling and just began to feel a sort of tremendous resentment, not even specifically for any particular minority so much as that they have lost their place in society, and they don't know what they're doing, and the era of the white working class, you know, worker in manufacturing and that sort of thing, it's not coming back, and they know that, or they should know that. But Trump has promised them that he's going to bring that back, and that's kind of what they were responding to on a gut level, just kind of like the hope that somebody is going to care about them. They feel like they've been left behind. Now, this, of course, is a generalization. We're talking about the group that overwhelmingly backed Trump. There are, of course, I know plenty of white Republican wealthy folks who just vote Republican, and that's that. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about everybody, but if you want to talk about the group that is credited with getting him over the hump, both men and women, it's white, non-college-educated folks.
All right, Michelle Cottle is going to stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. You are listening to a special post-election live call-in episode of The United States of Anxiety. It's WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that inform voters and their choice for president. I'm Jamie Floyd. We'll be back with more of your calls after this.
This is a special post-election call-in episode of The United States of Anxiety, WNYC and the nation's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. You can hear the entire United States of Anxiety series at WNYC.org/anxiety and leave a comment letting us know what's on your mind during this divisive time. United States of Anxiety is also available as a podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on the WNYC app.
This is a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choices for president. I'm Jamie Floyd. And with us on the line is Michelle Cottle. She's contributing editor at The Atlantic. And now we're going to bring in Jennifer Rubin to the conversation. She writes the Right Turn blog for The Washington Post. Jennifer, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here again.
So we're going to talk women more broadly. And we've been talking about white women and all the complicated reasons that they voted for the GOP this time around, specifically for Donald Trump. But we know that women as a whole trend Democratic. And yet there is Omarosa, of course, the African-American contestant on The Apprentice, who's been a vocal supporter for Donald Trump throughout. But in all seriousness, there have been many other women, women who are not white, who also voted for Trump. I want you to take a listen to Denise Galvez. She's co-founder of Latinas for Trump. She spoke with my colleague Michelle Martin on NPR's Weekend, All Things Considered, last Saturday. This is how she responds to people who feel threatened and demeaned by Donald Trump.
They have been fed a load of bull. And just like everything that was reported in the news that turned out to be untrue, they need to re-examine their thoughts of Donald Trump.
So, listeners, if you're like Denise Galvez and you're a Hispanic or Latina woman and voted for Donald Trump, or if you know someone who did, a woman who did, call us up. Or perhaps you know a Pakistani or Indian American woman who voted for Trump. Call us up. Tell us why. And there are African American women who voted for Trump, too. Evangelicals. If you are one of them, or if you are going to be having Thanksgiving dinner with one of them and you want to express your thoughts about that, call us up. Tell us what you're going to say across that Thanksgiving dinner table. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also tweet us at WNYC if you can't get to a phone. And we understand the reasons, Jennifer Rubin, why white women might vote for Donald Trump. Help us to understand why other women would turn away from Hillary Clinton and instead vote for Donald Trump, especially given the nature of the rhetoric around gender. What was his appeal for those women?
Well, let me begin by suggesting people not discuss it across the Thanksgiving table.
Good idea.
Dissension in America, so let's all come together and enjoy one another's company. It is very hard for many of us to understand that, because it wasn't simply the media telling us things about Donald Trump. Donald Trump himself expressed his views quite frequently. It was recorded, it was played back, it was excerpted about his views of Mexican-Americans, his view of a Mexican-American judge, his views of women, his treatment of women. So I think it comes down to a more fundamental question, which is disturbing but really quite evident in this election, which is people tend to believe what they want to believe. And unfortunately, there are times when logic and evidence and even the candidate's own words don't seem to mean all that much. And so if you're looking for a rational reason why these women would say Donald Trump is good for women, or Donald Trump is good for Latinas, or Donald Trump is good for African-American women, I think we're probably headed down the wrong road. And I think it's important to look at this, I think, from the perspective of people choosing increasingly in politics their guy, their member of their tribe, the person who's on their side. And for a variety of reasons, people may feel like they've been dealt a bad hand, either culturally, as you folks were discussing. There's Robert Jones's great book, The End of White Christian America. It may be people who are in blue-collar jobs. It may be people who are in towns that have, in essence, been depopulated because of the shift in the economy. It may be people who have had multiple bad marriages. It may be all sorts of things. But Trump was very good at cultivating this victimology, mm-hmm. that if you're angry, if you think things are not going well, he'll give you people to be angry at and people to blame. And it's a powerful psychology. It's worked throughout the ages, unfortunately. Yeah. And I think we're much better served by trying to understand how he converted perhaps real anxieties, real concerns, into phony issues and some rather racist and misogynistic attacks. So I think that's better way perhaps of looking at it than trying to say, well, some African-American women think he'd be good for jobs or have a better housing idea. I don't think that was what was going on at all.
All right. Let's hear from perhaps some of these women who voted for Donald Trump. Monica is calling us from Long Island. And in fact, we did our series U.S. of Anxiety, United States of Anxiety, largely out on Long Island. Monica, welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous, please.
I'm Spanish, and my English, sometimes I don't catch, you know, some words, but I could start telling you it's endless why I voted for Donald Trump.
Well, give us the first reason, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I pay $400, but I have an income of about $40,000 a year, and I pay close to $400 a month on Obamacare, and I have a deductible that I have to explain to every Spanish person I've run into what a deductible is, $6,000. So that comes to about $11,000, and there is no doctors that will take my car. So even if I'm sick and I'm the mother of two who are going to college, so I can't even go to the doctor even if I pay $11,000 a year. I mean, I will have to pay $11,000 to go to the doctor. So the $5,000 doesn't cover.
So
I pay Obamacare, and I can't go to the doctor.
So
there's no doctors want to take my car.
So the bottom line for you was economy. You looked in your wallet and you voted, as so many Americans do, on that. But were you concerned at all about Donald Trump's rhetoric, specifically about Mexican Americans, about immigration?
No, he said on the first day of his presidency he will abolish Obamacare. And I am looking for that because it's and if you don't have health care, you're supposed to pay 2.5% of your annual salary.
Yes.
On penalty.
Right, but Monica.
So you have to make $20,000 a year.
Yes.
To get some kind of to see a doctor,
Monica.
And, if you make a little bit more,
yes. Your English is excellent, by the way. You shouldn't be nervous at all. But I asked you specifically about. I hear you on the Obamacare, and he's now backing away, by the way, from that. He's now saying he's going to keep parts of Obamacare. But I'm asking you.
Hopefully, he will back up on the wall because I'm Mexican.
That's what I'm asking you about. So you are Mexican.
I'm Mexican, and
so what do you think
really
about that?
He said he was going to build a wall, and then we're going to be like Palestinians.
It hurts your feelings? It hurts your feelings?
You know, it's just pretty sad about that. You know, it's like we Mexicans are Americans. We just Indian Americans that run down to the south, you know.
but you voted for him anyway, despite the war.
Anyway, because my children are borrowing. My children are in college right now. And my children are borrowing $40,000 a year. Hmm. And my son has the worst room in the house. He lives with other five boys, and my daughter is borrowing $50,000 a year, and the government is giving it to them. You know.
Okay, Monica.
They go to college, and you have a free pass to borrow money.
Monica, thank you so much for your call, and I really hope you will call us again. I really do. Thank you very, very much for your call, and you didn't sound nervous one bit. Okay, let's go to Tony. Tony is calling us from New Jersey. Thank you so much for calling, Tony.
Yes, hi. I have just experienced kind of an interesting phenomenon. I'm a criminal defense attorney representing indigent people in New York City. And there was just such a divide. The court officers all were very pro-Trump. But then I had clients who, for the most part, are poor Black or Latino folk. And one in particular just struck me because she lives in a housing project and she's on public assistance. And after we dealt with her case, and it was a case where she had to defend herself at a public housing project, we dealt with her pleading guilty and getting probation. And I said to her, Ivy, congratulations, good luck with your future. Who are you going to vote for? And she said, Donald Trump. And I was floored. And she said, I said, why? And she said, well, he tells it like it is. So no matter what his message or his overall scheme is, he spoke to many people in a very, visceral way that made them think he was on their side.
Thank you so much for relaying that, Tony, and for your work as a criminal defense attorney.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's go to Kathy in Queens. Kathy, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hello.
Go ahead, Kathy. You're with yes, Jennifer and Michelle on WNYC.
Hello, how are you? I am African American. I was naturalized in the United States. I voted for Donald Trump. I'm also Roman Catholic. I did vote because, number one, I am pro-choice. I'm not pro-choice. I mean, I am against abortion.
Yes, pro-life. Okay?
But the real reason I voted for Donald Trump was because I was tired of the rhetoric in Washington. I was so exhausted of it, and I needed to send a message. When I picked up my pen to vote, I wanted to write Hillary, but that my message was stronger. I wanted to say, I'm tired. Okay? I'm not poor. I have a six-figure salary. And a lot of people around me, I see there were people struggle from paycheck to paycheck. And it goes on and on and on. And that is why I voted for Donald Trump. And in terms of the media publicizing things about Donald Trump, they made Donald Trump who he was. They gave him all the publicity he needed. They made him succeed. Yes. Donald Trump said a lot of things I didn't like. I didn't like what he said about women. I didn't like what he said about Mexican. I did not like the way he expressed himself. However, despite all this, I voted for him because I needed to say this.
Kathy,
after years and years and years.
Kathy, when you voted for him to send the message, did you think he would win?
Yes. Yes.
So you were not surprised.
I was not surprised.
All right. I thank you so much, Kathy, for your call. I want to turn back to my guest, Jennifer Rubin, who writes the Right Turn blog for The Washington Post, Michelle Cottle, whose latest piece in The Atlantic is entitled Why White Women Continue to Back the GOP. Jennifer, first to you. Do you hear any common thread from these women? Or is the very point here, as I was saying with Kathy before you joined us, that we can't really put women in a monolithic group, even those who chose to vote for Donald Trump?
I think there's a little bit to all of that. It's very hard, even when you ask people why they vote for something or someone, to explain, because sometimes it's inchoate. Sometimes it's simply a visceral sensation. And your last caller, I thought, was actually quite poignant on that. She is someone who's so frustrated, whether she's frustrated because of gridlock or frustrated because of terrorism or frustrated because whatever, this is the only way she feels that she has a voice, by doing something that is out of the box, that is out of the ordinary. And Donald Trump, for all of his many, many faults, and there was no more passionate opponent of him in the center right than I, he clearly did understand that anger and frustration and was willing to pose as a non-politician, a non-insider. This billionaire was willing to say things and behave in ways that people did not normally associate with politics. I do think, however, that there is one sort of common theme, in that they really weren't interested in what he promised. They were simply interested in what he was saying. He never gave an alternative to Obamacare. So your caller is not necessarily going to get something better. She doesn't even know what she's going to get. He railed against Washington, D.C., but now, of course, he has, you know, a myriad of lobbyists and insiders and all the rest who are coming along with him. So how was he going to accomplish this? There was this almost naive belief that because he spoke so strongly and so passionately, things were going to be better. And they never really were all that interested in how he was going to do it or what he was going to do it, what he was going to do. And I am so struck by the difference in approach, because Hillary, as she liked to say, had the responsibility gene and had a zillion proposals for everything. And that apparently was not what Americans wanted to hear, as disturbing as that may be for those of us who operate in the realm of policy and ideas and argumentation and an informed political electorate. That was not what they wanted to hear. Yeah. They, in a sense, weren't even interested in what the respective candidates were going to do. They just liked this guy who didn't like the things that they didn't like and was going to be their guy.
And Michelle Cottle, you were with us for the first part of our episode, our segment, our special. What we heard from the white women who called in sounded strikingly like what we heard from this last group of women, one Haitian woman, one Mexican woman. It did not seem to me that they were too disparately situated in terms of their response, their emotional reaction to Donald Trump. When they stepped, one woman saying, "I walked into the voting booth and I lifted my pen and I was," that was our last caller. "I lifted my pen and I was going to vote for Hillary, but I just felt I had to send a message." And she's a Haitian American woman.
Yes, it's back to the whole issue of how he made them feel. And it's not that he made them feel like he was like this great respecter of women, even. It's just he was promising them that he was going to do something different. It is the ultimate example of the triumph of style and manner over policy or even ideology. You know, he's not a regular conservative Republican candidate. We have no idea what his ideology is. We have no idea what his policies are going to be, because that's not what he ran on. He ran on telling people, you have a right to be angry. You should be angry at these people. I will change whatever it is that's making you unhappy, and we're going to make America great again, and it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be huge. And that's what resounded with folks,
because
they were so frustrated with whatever.
I can't end the segment, and I do have to move on, but I can't end the segment without asking this. How is it that these women were able to overlook the Trump on the bus and all the, you know, audio tape and all the women who came forward making allegations? They were just allegations. But that sort of aspect of his, I realize that Hillary had her baggage as well. But it just seemed to me that that really would have devastated him with this key demographic.
Nothing he did devastated him, and in part it helps that he is a reality TV celebrity. People just roll their eyes. I talk to women who are like, "Oh, you know, he says stuff like that, but that's not really who he is," or even, you know, maybe he'd made some mistakes, but it's worth it because he's going to be this great leader. It speaks to Jennifer's point of people believe what they want to believe. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they thought that the press was making stuff up despite the fact that it was Donald Trump on audio tape and videotape and Twitter making these remarks.
As our caller Frank said earlier tonight. All right, I want to say a very big thank you to contributing editor to The Atlantic, Michelle Cottle. Her latest piece is entitled "Why White Women Continue to Back the GOP," and Jennifer Rubin, who writes the Right Turn blog for The Washington Post. Thanks to you both.
Thanks so much.
And this is a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety. Please stay with us. I'm Jamie Floyd, and we'll be back with more of your calls and a look ahead after this.
This is a special post-election call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC in the nation's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. You can hear the entire United States of Anxiety series at WNYC.org/anxiety and leave a comment letting us know what's on your mind during this divisive time. United States of Anxiety is also available as a podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on the WNYC app.
And this is a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that inform voters and their choice for president. I'm Jamie Floyd. So all this raises the question, where do we go from here? Because we have to find a way, as women, as families, as a community, to talk to one another again, which is in large part why we are having these conversations this week and next on WNYC. The anxiety has to give way to something else. So what is that for you? Is it action? Is it mobilization? Is it a reordering of your friendships and your alliances? And how are you going to handle Thanksgiving conversation? Maybe you will do what Jennifer Rubin suggested and just not talk about politics, or maybe you will talk about it in a new and different way. Call us now and let us know your way forward. 212-433-WMYC. That's 212-433-9692, or tweet us at WNYC. Now, Donald Trump gave his first interview as president-elect on 60 Minutes. It aired this past Sunday. Some of his policy statements during the campaign now seem to be opening salvos in future negotiations, but he reiterated his stance on abortion, saying once again that he is pro-life, just like any Supreme Court justice he shall appoint. And Trump had this exchange with Leslie Stahl.
But having to do with abortion, if it ever were overturned, it would go back to the states. So
yeah,
it would go back to the states.
Some women
and the states
won't be able to get an abortion.
No, it'll go back to the states.
By state? No, some.
Yeah. Well, they'll perhaps have to go to they'll have to go to another state.
And that's okay.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's got a long way to go, just so you understand. That has a long, long way to go.
Joining us now to discuss the ways in which women are divided in this country over the abortion issue and so many others, and how to bring them back together around issues that affect all women, Sonia Osorio. She's the president of NOW in New York, and we are so pleased you are joining us here on WNYC. Sonia,
well, thank you so much for having me.
So I want to get back to the numbers for a minute, because 54% of women overall voted for Hillary Clinton. We focused at the top of our hour on the 53% of white women who voted for Hillary Clinton. The hour has been largely about the women who did feel disaffected enough to vote for Donald Trump. And of course, we haven't talked at all about the 100,000 Americans who don't vote at all in this country. That's another topic for another day. But Sonia, how are you strategizing to bring women back together at the National Organization of Women as women after this very divisive election cycle?
Well, it certainly has been decisive, difficult for very, very many people. What we're experiencing, let me just tell you what's happening on the ground. Our phones are ringing off the hook. Our national site was so overloaded that it crashed. So there are many, many women, millions of women, who feel that this election did not go in the right direction. They fear for their family's economic security. They fear for the rollback of so much progress that has been made in this country, not only for women's rights, but for civil rights, for social justice. They are concerned that where we had gotten with criminal justice reform will now come to a stop. It's very concerning that, you know, the day after the election, the private prison stocks skyrocketed. One of the things that we've done at NOW, I mean, NOW has been around for 50 years. We have been doing this work for 50 years, and we are not going to stop now. And we've always done that as a grassroots organization. Our leaders are here to keep our ear to the ground, to study policy, but we take it back to our members and our communities and ask them, how do you want to move forward? And so we do a lot of things as a group, as a community, in our offices across the country. And just to give you an example, you know, late last week, we said, well, we need to have an open house at our office so that our members can come together, peel some, and start to strategize about how to move forward. And we got 1,400 responses, and that's just in New York City. We ended up moving the event. We had it last night. We moved it to the Society for Ethical Culture, and it was astounding. Everybody showed up.
On the Upper West Side.
Yes, and then we actually, after having them there for 2 hours, we said, in a surprise move, we said, listen, we want to march now to Columbus Circle as an act of solidarity and to raise our voices lo and behold, they all stayed. And it was quite a sight. I mean, we were three blocks long of women. And Trump Tower right now on Central Park West is, you know, there are police everywhere, as you can imagine. They saw us coming.
Now, are you talking about the Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue?
No, the one at Columbus, the hotel. On Columbus Circle.
Down at the bottom of Central Park West.
Yes, and it was really an experience that I have never experienced the amount of. It wasn't outrage so much last night as it was a sense of strength. Go ahead.
And now there is a march planned for the weekend of the inauguration. Women planning to march. They're billing it as another mm-hmm. million woman march. I want to bring in a young woman who is a student at New York University. She's a journalism student, in fact. Her name is Lucia Isabel Seda, and she is calling us because she spent time in the fall talking with Latinas and others who were considering voting for Donald Trump. Thank you so much for being with us. I know you have a lot going on in your busy life as a journalism student, and we need good journalism. I think, learn that in this election cycle more than ever. But, Lucia, what did you learn when you were out talking with these, were they women, Latino women, and why they might consider voting for Donald Trump, despite his rhetoric about Mexicans and building a wall, et cetera?
Yes, thank you so much. So I spent some time speaking on the phone with women who, Latinas, who happen to be Trump supporters, and I asked them the question that a lot of us had, you know, why are you voting for Donald Trump and why are Latinas or why should Latinas vote for Trump? And one of the things I noticed was this perception that they had of Trump as a free agent vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton. I can tell you that from the conversations I had, one of the most common threads was this idea of a political outsider like Trump who could come in and really challenge the establishment. I mean, he said so himself when he used the term drain the swamp to precisely refer to his plan of doing away with the political elites in Washington. So that seemed to be one of the common threads. Also, I noticed that many of them were convinced that Trump was responding to the needs of all Americans across the board. So not just women or Latinos, but the entire American electorate. And when I posed the question, why should Latinas specifically vote for Trump, Denise Galvez, in fact, told me that there are no specific issues that Latinos care about, but rather broader issues that all Americans care about. And from this point of view, Donald Trump is committed, in their view, to putting Americans as a whole first.
All right. I want to keep you on the line, Lucia. I also have on the line with us the president of Now NYC, Sonia Osorio. I want to correct something I said a moment ago. I've got too many zeros on the page. Of course, it's a million folks who didn't vote, not 100,000, although we did have disappointing turnout here in the New York City area, as well as Bridget Bergen reported earlier tonight. Let me jump over to Elizabeth, who's calling us from the Lower East Side, my old neighborhood where I grew up. Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling in. What's the way forward, Elizabeth?
Well, I'm an educator, and I work with mostly Latina women who have families, and most of them are single mothers, and they're going to college. And, you know, I think the way forward is really education and talking and listening to people, being compassionate. You know, we talked a lot about the importance of exercising your right to vote. And I have to say, as much as we spoke about it every class, that most of these women did not feel represented by either of the candidates, and most of them kind of, in their own elegant way, decided not to participate in the election. And they're a bit stunned and depressed that Trump won. However, you know, I was listening to the other callers. There was a Latina woman who called. She said she had Mexican heritage, and another woman who identified herself as African American. And, you know, what I was really hearing from them was that they were just so strapped economically that right. It was not that Trump somehow, let's say, seduced them with his charm or whatever, or his rhetoric into thinking that he would really make a difference, but that they just knew that the system as it was going was not viable for their, you know, prosperity in any way. So they in those cases decided to vote for Trump. I mean, that I think my students would have thought that was a pretty extreme decision, but I think that they would understand where that was coming from.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you. I'm going to take another call. Lucretia, I'm tight on time, but I very much want to hear what you have to say from Carteret, New Jersey.
Yes, hello. I think the only way forward is that we must start talking about politics. I'm 51 years old, and I've been taught from a child that politics is not something you discuss. I think that's because you won't keep a lot of friends if people share their views, and we're at a point that we have to start talking about it.
But Lucretia,
no longer be,
Lucretia, what about all the people who don't vote? 100 million people, it's something like 97, 98 million people, didn't even bother to vote.
It's outrageous, but I understand the apathy because a lot of people have come to believe that their vote no longer matters. I think that's directly related to the Electoral College in a lot of ways. I think if people thought that their vote really counted and mattered and their voice was heard through voting, that might change.
All right, Lucretia, thank you so much for that call. I want to give my last comment to Sonia Osorio in about 30 seconds. What about Lucretia's comment that there's apathy and that we need to be more honest and direct with one another about politics as women?
Well, without a doubt, with everybody who is around us, you know, one of the things we did at our event last night is we said we want to challenge ourselves to learn, to listen, to speak up, and engage as an activist. And that starts with having those uncomfortable conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that with that, it's starting to sink in. You know, there's been a number of days where people have just been in shock.
All right.
But let's take a look at what has happened just in the last day or two.
Okay.
To have Steve Bannon be Trump's chief advisor.
All right, I'm out of time, but I think that's probably a good place to alert people at the end of our conversation. Thank you so much to Sonia Osorio, president of the National Organization of Women New York. Thank you to my other guests as well, and to Lucia Isabel Seda for calling in. You've been listening to a special post-election live call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety. It's WNYC's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that inform voters and their choice for president. Our call-in series continues tomorrow night and all this week at 8 o'clock here on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd. Thanks for listening, and good night.